Today on This Week in Pop, movies that don't leave the room.
Isolated thrillers.
That's what
they're
called?
Get used to the name. It's going to be a thing.
Is that a section in Blockbuster?
It should be. That one that's left.
Yeah. Also, TV shows that are coming back, TV shows that shouldn't come back, and TV shows that they just keep bringing back. Stop doing it. That's today on This Week in Pop. Today's episode is brought to you by MoviePass.
MoviePass. Still a thing.
Yeah.
3 million subscribers.
I use it. Do you use it?
I do. Frequently.
Frequently.
Like you're too
the,
frequently.
You're the reason it might go away someday.
No, I'm the reason that's in business.
Ah. I agree to disagree. You can try MoviePass right now and support this podcast all at the same time.
Wow.
Thanks, guys. $9.95 a month. Unlimited movies. Go to thisweekinpop.com/moviepass. That's thisweekinpop.com/moviepass. Hello and welcome to This Week in Pop. I'm Tommy West.
Maxwell, that was jarring. I wasn't ready for that.
I didn't know how else to do it.
It was good. Yeah. It caught my attention.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been 2 weeks.
I had to
go on a little jaunt.
Yes.
I'm back.
Yes.
Although we're missing Jenna.
Yeah, she forgot we were back this week.
That's cool.
She's actually sick, and it's funny. I feel bad because there's a few people who have had the flu and a cold. I've had people in my family who have a cold, and it's like in June. It's weird. It's like when in summertime, you're not supposed to be sick in the summer.
Yeah.
Save that for the winter when there's nothing else to do.
Nobody in my family gets sick. I've never been sick.
Yeah. That's never happened.
That's true. No, never. Huh. Just getting more healthy.
It's kind of odd.
Every day.
Lots to talk about. You know how much we've, I think if we've now counted, I think over the past 3 episodes, we've somehow always mentioned Solo.
And I don't get why. I don't like that we're talking about this all the time. Yet we somehow get roped in.
Yeah. I mean, I think because it's such an anomaly that, anomaly. Am I pronouncing
anomaly,
that right?
But I liked anomaly. That's okay. Fine.
Metal. See, sometimes I'll mispronounce things on purpose. Sometimes I do it accidentally.
That was accidental. It sounded accidental.
The fact that it's a Star Wars movie and it tanked, and it's funny too. I had a day off and my son was home from school. I was like, you know what? I'm gonna go take him to go to the movies. And I was like, I'll take him to go see Solo. And then I'm like,
so you went.
No, then I was like, I don't really want to see that.
What did you wind up seeing?
I didn't see anything. I was like, forget the movies. Great. That's a bad idea.
Like you left him like Michael leaves George Michael on the stairs of
hey,
the fishing tip. Something came up.
Even better is the fact that, keep in mind, again, I have a movie pass, so I'm not
It's not
really
a matter of money. It's right. Just laziness that you didn't want to go
like,
spend time with your son.
Yeah, I mean, I still spend time with him. It was just that I don't want to spend time with him watching that thing. And I didn't know this, but Ron Howard, has recognized?
Sort of half-ass apologized for the lack of success for the movie because still made over $180 million domestic, which is sort of in the equivalent of tanking in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
About half of what Rogue One made. So, yeah. I mean, it tanked. It didn't make the money it was supposed to make for a Star Wars film. And there's several reasons as to why people think it is. Like the drama that's all around it, 85% of people who go see movies don't pay attention to what's happening behind the scenes. Only nerds like us focus on the drama happening backstage.
Right.
I don't think that had a lot to do with it. I wouldn't be surprised if you asked over half the people if they knew that the original directors of that were the Millers, Phil Lord and Chris Miller, or the other way around. We never get it right.
Yeah.
They would never know that.
Yeah.
Like, so I think it's just fatigue. I think it's too much Star Wars and people need a break.
I think it's a combination of those things, but also the fact that even drawing you in, like I think Rogue One it was exciting because it was this prequel story of like what happened leading up to the beginning of A New Hope. Mm-hmm. You know, the first scene you ever see in Star Wars. And so there was a thrill there. There was an excitement of like, oh, what is that story? No one ever really questioned Han Solo's story before. Like he just shows up and he is his personality. You're not like, no one was really asking, oh, what are his origins? Where did he come from? Why is he the way he is?
Yeah.
And even if that's the case of like, those things are explained easily in like one line quotes in another movie somewhere.
Sure.
We don't need an entire movie built around him.
No. In fact, a friend of mine said it'd be funny if they did like Kurt Russell in Guardians of the Galaxy. They just made Harrison Ford CGI to play his younger self, although he'd never agreed to it. But yeah. I would pay to see that version.
Yeah.
Much sooner than I'd pay to see what's out there now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. Mm. So that is interesting. Speaking of sequels and prequels and things.
The quills.
In the world of television, and I feel bad because I'm not a fan of Game of Thrones necessarily.
But
as in,
I am.
Are you?
I love it.
Oh, I didn't know you were. Oh, yeah,
we just never really talk about it because you guys always talk about Westworld.
I love Westworld, which, by the way, that is heating up. Save that for next week when Jenna's back, though. But are you excited? There is a Game of Thrones prequel.
I don't care. I've never liked prequels. I've never liked deviations of original shows.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I was having a conversation with a different friend about how I don't think there are that many good spinoffs. They brought up Frasier and Better Call Saul. And sure, I mean, those are great, but they're very few and far between compared to all the other types of prequels and spinoffs they've tried to make and have failed spectacularly. So I'm sure it'll be fun. It'll be a nice replacement, like a methadone for Game of Thrones people who are withdrawing and they want new Game of Thrones type stuff. But it won't be the same.
I think because the show is coming to an end, right?
Yes, there's planning. I believe it's the last season's coming up. There's going to be 6 to 8 episodes, but they're going to be movie length.
Okay.
So they're like these little mini movies that you're going to get. And that's amazing to me. They filmed multiple endings with each cast member. So nobody really knows what the real ending is, which is great. I hope they release all of those.
I hope they release a choose your own adventure.
That'd be
cool. And then you get to like choose how the movie
ends. Like a Goosebumps-esque movie or show.
Is that how that worked?
Yeah. And Goosebumps. You got to choose your own ending in some of them.
I wasn't a scholastic kid. No. My checks always bounced.
Yeah. Reading's tough. I know.
I know. The one thing I was reading is the fact that, and I guess this is sort of a nod to religion a little bit, but what they're doing is saying like, they're like these mythical legends and stuff in the show, mm-hmm. like people that you never ever see, but they discuss or talk about like the great blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
They're going to basically go back and show you how like that entire story was BS and sort of like, like some guy kept exaggerating the story to his friend and then his friend exaggerated it to the point where like there's a giant beast with like fire breathing dragon. And in reality, it was like someone lit a fire in front of like an alligator.
Sounds an awful lot like religion.
So
I'm interested in that. I hadn't heard that was the angle they're going for.
Yeah.
I think Game of Thrones comes out next summer, not this summer, but they're filming now. Mm-hmm. And I would assume the prequels, I wouldn't be surprised if they aim to air them right after Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
So that seems to be their goal. And then you said two of them got greenlit so far or almost greenlit?
So one of them, I think the pilot was greenlit. Mm-hmm. Trying to like breeze through some of this stuff. I guess that's going to be coming. And then HBO in general, I think they're just kind of looking for like, where do they go from here? Mm-hmm. Right. They're looking for successor shows. They call them.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, I've actually, I watched Barry in its entirety finally, and I loved it. I take back what I said. It picked right back up. The direction it went was not where I thought it was going.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see Bill Hader take this kind of role. I don't envision him doing this, but now that I see it, it's great. He's doing a fantastic job. He's not, you know, this deadpan, schlocky sketch actor that we normally take him for granted.
Yeah.
He's delving into this role really well.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to just announce right out of the bat, like this, I'm going to throw spoilers and stuff out here because I would really like to talk about Barry. It's only 8 episodes anyway. If you haven't seen it yet, stop right here, go watch the entire thing. It's amazing. What's really interesting is a lot of people talked about how the show essentially wrapped. Like you could, if this show was never ever going to, like if that was it, if it was just one season, like one thing and that's it, it wrapped in a really cool way. And then I think NoHo Hank just stole the show. Mm-hmm. Like his character might have been my favorite of anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, the show was so well written. I didn't expect it.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing too, is I started reading a lot of scripts. This is how I do read once in a while, but I started reading, a lot of other Alec Berg HBO stuff. And he has such a specific style of writing.
What else has he been on? What's his other HBO shows?
I mean, he's pretty much done like Entourage, Ballers.
Okay.
I forget. There's a few others on his resume. Silicon Valley.
Okay.
Alec Berg as well.
But it's funny because like to me, Barry doesn't seem like it's a Ballers or a Silicon Valley or an Entourage. It very much seems different. So I'm surprised that Alec Berg is he's one of the key writers on it.
He's one of the creators.
Interesting.
But there's a certain pacing to the HBO shows where, you know, you're sort of left off at the end with this like cliffhanger and then he punch you with the, you know, a soundtrack at the end. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a signature HBO thing at this point, but in reality, it's kind of a signature Alec Berg thing, but yeah, Barry was kind of a out of nowhere. I did not expect that coming. And I actually read the original script to Barry. And I will say I'm really, really happy they fleshed out his character because in the original script, he spoke a lot more. There was a lot more into his personality. He was a lot more of a dick. Like he was a lot more of a regular person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think by the time it made it to the version of Barry you see in the show, he is a little bit more closed off. He's a little bit of a weird social guy.
Rightfully so.
And I think that works better than where they originally started the character. They started the character where he's just a guy who's like, no, I don't want to do this anymore. He had never met his handler. And it was a very different show. But yeah, if you haven't seen Barry, just go watch it.
It is always fun to see how they flesh certain things out from the time they write the initial pilot to what the actual result is.
Yeah.
Like even with Game of Thrones, like they shot that pilot and it tested so poorly. They reshot the entire thing.
Wow.
Everything was redone.
Yeah.
And I would pay a lot of money to see that original pilot because I just want to see what went so wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of Game of Thrones fans would. They wouldn't, you know, it's not something you would hate on.
Yeah.
It's, you know, people, I mean, I guess it would be cruel to go back and bash it, but there was a reason why they reshot it. I think at some point it would be fun to see what they were reshooting.
And it's really interesting too, because, you know, I think we've talked about like other shows, AP Bio being one of them, where it takes some time to flesh out the characters of a show and the nuances to people.
I'm still waiting for that to happen for AP Bio.
Yeah, it's going to take a while. But like, even if you go back and like watch The Office or Parks and Rec, it took a good, I mean, the first seasons of both of those shows were like, what, 8 episodes?
Yeah, six to eight.
And then they sort of found themselves, you know, Michael Scott was more of an ass than he was like a fool for the beginning of it. And then he sort of turned into, you know, a giant child, a man child.
And Leslie Knope was more of a Michael Scott in season one.
Right.
And then they sort of fleshed her out into a little bit of more of a sane person who's just lovable, but, you know, intense.
Yeah. And sometimes they do that through that process, through actually like, you know, writing episodes, filming them, seeing what the character is. I got to tell you, I mean, if you watch Barry, that is fleshed out. I mean, it's 8 episodes or 12 episodes. I forget how many episodes.
8.
It is fleshed out. And that character is rounded and has depth. And I think that's what made it work so well. The show as written goes back to like, I think it was like 2016. They started writing that show in the summer. And then one of the revisions that I actually read was down in like December 2016. They only filmed it last year. So, you know, another half a year or so later, they ended up fleshing out this character and like pulling out, you know, like, no, don't make him such an asshole. Make him sort of like a, you know, reluctant guy.
Mm-hmm. And they renewed it for season 2 already, right?
Yeah.
So there you go.
But the show wrapped up in a way where I'm like, I don't even see how they can come back from
well,
this.
Well, you're going to get it. That's what happens.
Yeah. And it gets dark. And they actually said it's going to get darker in the next season too.
I'd like to see that. I'm on board with it now.
Yeah. On to some other movie things. You binged watched some stuff, didn't you?
Yeah.
Didn't you, Maxwell?
I was away this weekend and I delved into the weird world of Netflix B movies, the ones they don't recommend to you.
Yes.
You dig around. And one thing that I found interesting, there's a lot of these sort of, I don't know what the right term is, but I dubbed them isolated thrillers. These are ones that usually take place in one location for the entirety of the movie.
Ooh, like The Room.
Sort of like, not The Room, Room. And even Room took place in other places, but the first portion of Room did in fact take place in a room. You're right.
What about 10 Cloverfield Lane?
That is sort of like an isolated thriller. Okay. We're talking sort of the 10 Cloverfield Lanes, but they're not not as popular. Like that was a very popular movie.
Yeah.
I'm talking about ones that came out 20 years ago, right to Netflix. And there's this whole world of them. And I watched about three of them. And one of them in particular was actually a really good movie called Cube. It was in 1997. It's got a cast of six people and they wake up in what is essentially this massive cube-like thing.
Okay.
And each area in each cube, there were four other cubes connected to that cube and there were traps. So you had to be careful which room, which next cube you went into. There were like certain tests you had to either, you know, they had to throw their boots to find out if it was a safe room. And there was a guy who was an escape artist. There was a cop. There was a doctor. There was a student. There was these different people and they always find out how they're connected and how they help each other is trying to escape this certain doom they find themselves in.
So can I tell you what the tagline for the movie is?
Sure.
It's don't look for a reason, look for a way out.
Yeah. And they try to find a way out. And you'd be surprised how well this can keep you entertained for an hour and 40 minutes of what is essentially the same room they're in all the time. Like they only shot probably three total cubes. Right? But the way they made this up, there were like thousands of them. And the concept was very, very interesting to me. It's on Netflix. It's the same guy who did a not so good movie called Splice with Adrian Brody, where they find a creature and raise the alien. He's done some other weird things. But if you have time, I highly recommend checking out Cube on Netflix. The other one I saw,
which, by the way, like, I just let you know also, and maybe this will help explain it.
Sure.
It is a Canadian sci-fi film. It went to the Toronto International Film Festival.
Yeah, it did.
That's where it was shown.
Well,
and, it won the award for Best Canadian First Feature Film at the 1987 Toronto Film Festival.
There you go. If that's not award enough for you, yeah. Award worthy.
When the movie started, if you watch the trailer, does it have those like festival, like leafy things on the side?
I didn't watch the trailer, but yeah. I'm sure it does.
Toronto International Film Festival winner. Best Canadian fruit.
There's like, nobody famous in it. No one I recognize, but a highly entertaining movie. So you should go check that out. The other one, not as good, but still pretty interesting, was called, I think, Circle.
Okay.
A lot of one word.
I was going to say.
Circle, cube, stuff like that. Circle revolve.
They're paying by the letter here.
Yeah,
for
they're stingy. This was a cast of 50 people, all very different ethnicities and races and genders, all wake up in a certain room and they're all facing each other and they're in these sort of red circles. And every 2 minutes, someone dies. And they slowly realize that they have the power to vote on who dies. And whoever gets the most votes after 2 minutes, they die. If they don't vote for anybody, someone random dies.
Okay.
If there's a tie, there is a tiebreaker. And one of them has to choose which one dies. We don't know why. We don't know what they're doing there. But in the span of 90 minutes, they had to sort of figure out why they're there, who should survive. And the roles they take is actually pretty interesting. There are some certain things that come out and very much psychological. You know, at first they try and vote out the elderly people because they're going to die anyway. Okay. But then there's a douchebaggy college guy who came up with the idea, gets voted out because he's a douchebag.
Okay.
So it was an interesting concept to see which one in the end survives.
Now, how do they all die? Like crazy.
They sort of just like get like some
zap,
little zap, and they get, you know, and out of the circle, almost voted out, but with death.
It was inspired, this is according to Wikipedia, it was inspired by the 1957 drama 12 Angry Men. So it's like, it's kind of like 12 Angry Men,
but with death.
But with death. And then not the jury choose. Yeah. Sort of. Also, I'm looking at the names in here. The only one that pops out to me is Julie Benz.
Yeah, Julie Benz, the one from Dexter. It plays a role in this this psychological thriller.
She's not even the top build either. She's like deep in there.
She is in it for a little bit, but I will spoil that she is not the lone survivor.
Aw, damn.
Yes.
Spoiler alert.
I'm sorry.
What else you got other than 12 Angry Men, but in a circle?
The other one I watched, the last of the three, and this is not a shape, but it is one word. It's called Exam.
They really are paying by the letter.
This one was about six people, I think six or eight people in this room trying to compete for this ultra lucrative, competitive job with this amazing company, but they don't really know much about it. They know that it's very well, you know, highly sought. They want, everyone wants this job. It pays very well. And they alluded to this as like a sort of a world that doesn't have a lot of employment. So this is a very, you know, people want to get this job. They get greeted by a man called the narrator or the interpreter, and he says that you have to answer one question in 80 minutes. They turn over the piece of paper that they all have. There's no question on it. What's the question? There are like three rules they have to abide by. They can't ruin their piece of paper. They can't leave the room, and they can't hurt the narrator. They can't hurt him who's talking about the rules. And their goal is to try and figure out what the question is and what the answer is. And it's a lot shorter than the other ones. I think it's actually 80 minutes, but it's very entertaining. I like the concept of these one room sort of like, what the hell is happening? Let's figure it out in a short amount of time.
So I have a question. So the exam is 80 minutes.
Yes.
And the movie's runtime is 101.
Oh, well, I mean, they say they have 80 minutes, so maybe there was more. That's all I'm going to say.
So
I'm not going to give away everything. You watch these one world, one word, one shape movies.
Well, I have a question. I mean, it's not in the same, and anyone famous in that, by the way?
One guy from that movie, The Guru, if you ever saw that.
That's a very deep reference.
With Heather Graham.
Yeah.
That guy's in it.
Oh, jeez.
That's about it.
Is it Jimmy Mystery?
What?
Yes, he was in East is East, Blood Diamond, The Guru, no, West is West.
Yeah, yeah, I guess.
Ella Enchanted.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the guy.
That's him. Jeez.
You'd be amazed how many of these movies there are, and they're all fantastic, and you should watch all of them.
I'm always interested. Like, you know, here we are, like, giving a lot of conversation to a movie like Solo, who, like, you know, did it win? Did it get back its budget, or did it not get back its budget? You know, this movie had a $600,000 budget that we're talking about. The Exam,
Exam.
Right. We don't want to. They're paying by the letter.
Right. You're giving them, you know, 75% more than they're worth.
And the X is also free because it's a rarely used letter. But it has $600,000 budget, which I feel like is a very attainable budget. Do you think it made its money back?
I would like to think that it did. I would imagine Netflix, if it's on Netflix, they pay a certain amount of money to get this movie on there. Yeah. And that's what's great about these movies is there's really not a lot of production budget or even staff budget. Or, you know, you're not getting well-known actors.
Right.
You're not doing expensive sets. You're in one room.
Yeah.
And the fact that you can create a well-crafted story that takes place in one room is pretty impressive.
Well, they did get Jimmy Mystery, so
he was a big deal back then. I don't know when this movie was made, but
2009. It's not that long.
It's a good year for isolated thrillers. So if you have a chance, go check them out. I think all three are on Netflix. Let me know what you think of them.
By the way, very side note on that, but I didn't see it, but I feel like I want to now. If it's in, it seems like it's sort of in this genre of like bottle movies. It's like bottle episodes, but bottle movies.
I called them isolated thrillers.
Isolated thrillers. Thank you. Excuse me. Yeah. What was the movie? It came out last year where they were like trapped in their office. Like a lockdown.
Oh,
like,
the Belko experiment.
Belko experiment. Was I liked that movie?
That was a good movie.
Okay. That was an entire building.
Yes. That wasn't so much an isolated thriller, and that did have a bigger budget. I think it was the same guy who did Cabin in the Woods. It had some well-known stars. The guy from Scandal's in it. Tony Goldwyn. James Gunn's brother is in it. I think he plays a big role. Michael Rooker's in it. The guy who plays the blue guy in Guardians of the Galaxy.
It was a James Gunn movie.
Oh, it was.
James Gunn wrote it.
He didn't direct it.
No, it was directed by Greg McLean.
I don't know who that is, but it definitely had the vibe of a James Gunn movie. That is an isolated thriller. I love that term. But that had a little more of a budget than most.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to check that out.
So yeah, that's the list of isolated thrillers.
Yeah. I'm gonna check that out.
Good.
What else we got going on? Oh, by the way, I want to just touch on this before we get out of here also, an abbreviated episode, if you will. Reboots and things. We talked about it briefly with, you know, TV shows that were rebooting or spinoffs and things like that. So one of the things that came out this week also was that NBC executives said they don't want to do these reboots. They don't want to bring back.
That's a lie.
Well,
it's a bold-faced lie.
I mean, this is what they're saying. They don't want to. I'm sure the thing is it's easy pickings because, you know, you end up getting a show like Will and Grace and bring it back and everyone goes crazy. And
Roseanne.
That one too, which by the way, the latest on that is it looks like I had reported, I was like, oh, when the last time we talked about that, I was like, I don't think it's going to happen. They're talking about potentially doing a spinoff without Roseanne. That didn't look like it was going to happen. Now it might happen. Now we're closer to that actually happening. So
I don't care either way.
Me either. Yeah. I think we're at this point, whatever happens.
Exactly.
Cool. It's like, oh, cool. John Goodman's got a paycheck. Good for him.
Had a paycheck.
I still think he was great on Community as the
he was
air conditioning
yes.
school dean.
That would be nice to bring him back.
Yeah, spin off with that. Call Dan Harmon. But no, they said they don't want to do these shows. I mean, there's been talk about. I mean, everyone went crazy because there was an interview on Ellen where they were like, "Oh, maybe we bring back Parks and Recreation." Everyone's like, "Ah, they're gonna bring it back." It's like, yeah, but literally the last episode dives like. Decades into the future and shows you everyone's future.
That was a show you shouldn't bring back. Yeah, they ended that show was one of the best endings that you could have for a sitcom, I think, ever.
It's bow wrapped up.
Yeah.
They've been talking about bringing The Office back, which me and you both love The Office, but those last seasons are unbearable. Like when they plop all these other characters in.
It becomes watchable once you run out of options and you're like just sick of looking at the other episodes.
Yeah.
They're not bad. I mean, they are different. And they take a weird turn with Jim and Pam's relationship, and they shouldn't have done that. But I mean, it tried. I'll give them credit for that.
I'll say there's not a lot of show like there's shows we kind of throw out there like, oh, they ran out of ideas. That's a show where they ran out of ideas.
Yes.
Like they were. And it's tonally it's just such a different show. And we've talked on here. We talked last time about the, you know, Arrested Development and bringing that back and how it's like it just feels different. I mean, people have aged and the tone is off. And
although I will say this, I'm now rewatching season 4 with my girlfriend who's never seen it before. After watching season 5 and going back into season 4, season 4 is pretty good.
It is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm kind of back on it.
Yeah.
So I apologize for my my tirades going against it. And I apologize
to Mitch Hurwitz. Did this on purpose. Maybe he kind of shoved this in our faces. So like, oh, you think it's bad? Hold my beer. Let me show you it's so bad. I mean, maybe sometimes it's like, all right, just lay it to rest. Like, you know, give us something different. I will say, and I'm just trying to shove a lot in here, but I binged Kimmy Schmidt. We talked about that last time and I can dive into a little bit further next week when Jenna's back because Jenna is a Kimmy Schmidt fan as well.
She's a Schmitter.
That show is a show that has not lost its tone.
Really?
I didn't realize how many seasons had gone by. They split this one again, like they did with the rest of development. But, and then I started going back and watching older episodes and I'm like, this is very reminiscent of like, 30 Rock. I think I've mentioned that before. Tonally, the show is very 30 Rock-esque. But that show has not lost its edge. All the jokes are snappy. There's not a lost line in there. They put her into different situations. I went back and started watching previous seasons again, and you realize every year they shake it up. You know, originally she's, you know, bunker girl and she gets a job as a nanny. Next season they shake it up and she's doing a different job. And next season they shake it up and she's doing something completely different. They've done that every season, but they haven't lost their edge. And they shake it up just enough where it's fresh, but not where it lost its personality.
What job does she have now?
She works for a tech company as an HR person or something. They're never really clear on it.
That is actually pretty funny to have her have that job.
Yeah. And then she makes people feel uncomfortable because she has to fire someone and she wants them to like her, but instead like she drops her pants in front of him and rubs his back.
Nice. Yeah, I've never watched Kimmy Schmidt, but I have to jump in on that so we can talk about it next week.
Yeah, I mean if you like 30 Rock, it is the same tone as 30 Rock. And I guess my point where I was going with that is don't bring The Office back. Just get Michael Schur and the rest of the writers back in a room together and come up with something new.
Which they do a lot.
Yeah. But like, I mean, they did it with Brooklyn Nine-Nine, right?
Yeah.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine was one of his things. You know, Mindy Kaling had the Mindy Project, which is over now, right?
Yes.
But bring her back and do a show with her and be writers and not actors on it and set up the new version of The Office.
There's a pilot actually Mike Schur's got. I think it's at NBC with the girl, and I think Natalie was her name, the one who winds up with Tom at the end of Parks and Rec.
Yes. Yeah.
So there's a pilot with her that Mike Schur created that got a pilot order that really? Is coming to NBC. So that could be a new one.
Yeah. But that's it's funny is like, that's what I mean is like, you know, we want more like that. I get it where executives are saying that, oh yeah, we don't want to reboot things. Great. But stop doing that. Yeah. Like, you know, we're always going to watch The Office on Netflix as long as they have that. The day that goes off is a day a lot of Xanax prescriptions get renewed and we go back to using that instead. Mm-hmm. But, you know, The Good Place is on NBC too. And that's a Michael Schur thing. And it takes some time to get into it. And they're all going to be different. But yeah, I think I'm more for like giving these producers and writers some more runway and letting them do something new and stop trying to retread old things.
Hell yes. Let's write them letters.
Yeah.
Write them letters.
We'll end on that note. We'll be back next week with more of This Week in Pop.
More stuff.
Bye.